this episode of Retain FM, and I'm delighted that my first guest, my very first guest on Retain FM, is Claire Yost. So Claire, welcome to the show.
Pete, I'm so thrilled and so honoured. What a fantastic thing to get to do, to be here on your first new name episode. So excited.
Yeah, well, I have decided after sort of racking up to 100 and odd episodes, I haven't reset the numbers because that seems like it would be soul destroying, to be honest. But but it does have the new name. So yeah, so you're the first new named episode, which
yeah,
I believe
exactly,
will be
exactly.
I believe it'll be episode 120. So there you go. So Claire is, well, Claire's a lot of things, and we're going to unpack that in a few minutes.
So you'll still be polite, yeah?
very much so. Although just so that everybody's perfectly clear, in our pre-chat before we hit record, Claire did mention that yesterday she had to go to a real meeting in actual clothes.
Yes.
So we aren't recording with the cameras on. I have seen her. She is clothed today. I can vouch for that. Whether they're real clothes or not, I only saw you from the shoulders up. So Claire. Oh, this has started in the way we wanted it to.
This is great. Let's keep going.
Claire, do you want to introduce yourself to the lovely ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls at home?
Yeah, so I'm the author of 8 books. I'm an international keynote speaker and I run the Passionate World Changers Club. And my big passion is helping people to ditch imposter syndrome, to set themselves free from those secret self-imposed glass ceilings on success and impact and revenue so that they can get out there and make an even bigger difference in the world. And I've been doing this for 17 years now.
Wow. 17 years.
I started very young. Only 25, yeah.
I was just thinking that's like a book every 2 years. That's some going, because they're not small projects to undertake.
They're not. And I actually only wrote my first book 10 years ago. So this year is a year without a book, which is entirely due to lockdown, because I know, like you, Pete, and many of the listeners on Retain FM, where we've been juggling work or business with childcare and homeschooling, I've been really lucky to know what day of the week it is most of the year without being able to hold a plot line in my head. Yeah.
yeah I get that. I do get that, and I must admit, I you know, it really does. So the way that it's kind of affected us is essentially Gabs, my wife, left work on March the 20th and then didn't come back until like September the 19th.
Wow.
And she has been an absolute superstar. Literally, her world went on stop. Conversely, because of the way that things were set up in the UK and all that kind of stuff, I couldn't stop. And that's where, we've literally, it's been sort of like, considering we work together, it's been separate journeys for the past 6 months or whatever, and things have only started to come back to normal. And yeah, you're right, from both sides of it, she's kind of plugged on through the week, not really knowing which day it is. You know, when does the weekend come? You don't really know because the kids are still here. And likewise, I've only known that it's been the weekend because I haven't gone to the office for 2 days, and that's it. So, but I mean, this year has been a massive challenging year in terms of mental health and actually what's emerging out of it. And also, I suppose there's that element of a lot of people don't struggle to cope with change, particularly enforce change. I know maybe we're sort of skirting around the subject of imposter syndrome a little bit and some of the related topics, but that whole concept of mental health and how you view yourself and how you motivate yourself, that's all been a massive factor of this year. So I'd love to know what your kind of thoughts on it are a little bit.
So what I've seen is things like imposter syndrome going through the roof, particularly actually with corporates. So less so with the entrepreneurs, because we tend to be really good at having a community and people we can talk to. And on social media, we tend to be more open and honest about how we're feeling. Mm-hmm. What I've seen with a lot of my corporate clients, so I run programs for them as well to help them step up to the next level of leadership, is they feel they can't be open about struggling because they think that will then mean they don't get that next promotion. They're not considered as high potential. And there is still a huge stigma in corporate around admitting that you've been struggling with mental health or even self-doubt and confidence and imposter syndrome. What's been happening, because we've had this crazy thing called uncertainty, because none of us have known for months on end what's going to happen next, and we've got the media bombarding us with fear-based messages, that has put a lot of people into the fight, flight, freeze mode, the stress zone. Mm-hmm. And it's put them into what's called hypervigilance, which is where you get stuck in fight, flight, freeze. And even at 3 a.m, you can still have your heart pounding as you worry and stress. And what this does is it reaches that part of the brain that is designed to look for threats. It's really, really useful if you're out there and there's a saber-toothed tiger prowling. It's much less useful if you're on a Zoom call and your boss makes a throwaway comment or a client asks a question that suddenly for you is perceived as a threat. And it fires off that chain reaction, both in your neuroscience and the body and the emotions of, oh God, what if they realize I'm not good enough and they find out I'm a fraud? And the other thing I've seen during lockdown is the model I have from the research I ran, the study I ran in 2019 on imposter syndrome, called the 4 P's of imposter syndrome. They're warning signs that imposter syndrome might be coming up. This one's been going crazy. And those 4 P's are perfectionism, procrastination, project paralysis, and people pleasing. You take people out of their familiar working environment, whether it's corporate, whether it's running your own business, you stick them in a room with a computer, which for a lot of people has even been their bedroom, so there's no downtime. Mm. And then suddenly you just give them back-to-back Zoom meetings all day because it's so much easier to schedule a meeting because people don't have to travel anywhere and you don't have to book a meeting room or a venue. And people have found their workload has gone through the roof. You add in carer responsibilities and the worry. And I'm seeing huge issues that we need to deal with proactively to support people through this.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a year that nobody can make up. And there are certain disciplines from working from home. You know, I saw a picture on Facebook just the other day where somebody had said after 6 months working at the kitchen table, it's great to finally get the office back. And what they'd done was they'd lifted some cardboard boxes into their loft.
Yeah.
And the picture was these stacked cardboard boxes with like something, I couldn't really tell what it was from the picture, but there's something firmer over the top to make a tabletop and then a collapsible chair and a lamp. And that that was the new office. But we seem to have come to it doesn't take 6 months for new behaviors to become normal. No. And because we've been in this sort of state of flux and this new way of working, and as you write, all of these, the different ways that people can put a pressure on, and there's no rule book, there's no social expectation or whatever you call it that goes along with it. The intrusions on people's freedom, the intrusions on people's privacy have been huge, but then the outlet for people to sort of de-stress from this have been limited as well because of the social distancing restrictions, etc. that you could, you know, when we, can you remember that day, that time we were only allowed out for an hour a day for exercise, for example?
I know, and it's absolutely crazy. And the other big thing is we don't realize how much we rely on our summer holidays. Yeah, and I know not everybody gets to go away, but a lot of people take that chunk of downtime over at some point over the summer, and we haven't done that this year, that battery recharging, that change of scene. Yep. And it's been really hard for people. I think that we don't understand how important it is to break our habits and do that thing that's like, I've moved away from the desk and I'm not going to look at it for 2 weeks. Yeah. And I think we need to be all proactively looking at what we can do to support our own mental health, but also to look at our team members, our colleagues, even our clients and our peers, to spot the warning signs of when people are struggling and to reach out, you know, particularly as me as a Brit, is get past that British thing of, I don't want to bother you, but I'm really worried. Yeah. It is reaching out and connecting with people in whatever way we can at the moment within the restrictions that COVID has brought.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I know you, obviously you run your mentoring side of things, your memberships, etc. Have you seen an increase in people being sort of open to those things, interested in those things? Has there been a financial restriction on them and you're seeing people struggle more from the outside thinking, I can help you? But how has that sort of affected you in the last few months?
So I've seen a lot of people are very overwhelmed. Yeah, because that's one of the stress responses is we get overwhelmed because there's too much information coming in. The people who I found who are doing the best through this are the ones who are being really strict on the number of meetings they'll allow. And they're actually saying no to opportunities or meetings that they don't think are going to add value because days are just filling with Zoom and that's utterly exhausting. I've seen a lot of individuals still really happy to invest. And I've seen a lot of small businesses still happy to invest. I've seen corporates pull the plug on investments completely until about this month. Most projects had gone on hold. And I've had clients that have been told they're not even allowed to buy stationery or a mouse mat on their company credit card anymore. So there's been such a variety of what's been happening. And what I've found is people's values have changed. What's important to them has changed. So in the past, they might have spent their money on one thing that maybe was more frivolous. And actually now they're spending it on what matters. And when I talk about spending, it's not just money. It's our focus, our attention, our energy, our time. And I really think one of the positives that will come out of this is we need to look at what really matters to me. Yeah. Do I, you know, if I look at my corporate clients, do I want to go back to commuting 5 days a week with a 2-hour commute each way when I could do it at home and actually see my kids at tea time? Yeah. And if I look at the entrepreneurial world, a lot of people have had to do massive pivots. They've had to redesign their businesses. I know I did. I had spent the whole of last year moving my business back to being face to face because my youngest son finally was in school often enough that I could commit to things like that. And then in March, my entire speaking calendar for the year got cancelled. And luckily, having been virtual for over a decade, it was fairly easy to turn around. But I had to look at the concrete strategy for how do I persuade my corporate clients that an online keynote for their conference can be just as good as a face-to-face one would have been. So I put strategies in place to allow them to take that journey that now mean I'm turning work away, which is great.
That's, and you know, this is why I love talking to you because you have such a personable way of explaining these things and how it sort of links into the core message that you stand for. And just that whole idea of saying no to work. So if you are somebody with imposter syndrome, I say that as if it's something that somebody has, like it's a tangible thing, like I've gone and bought a mug and that's not what I mean. I know it's different to that.
Yeah.
But if you're somebody that suffers with those thoughts, with those tendencies, actually saying no to something is even harder because you feel like you need to please everybody all of the time.
Exactly.
And that then creates the internal battle in you and then you get stressed about having to do this and then you can't say no to that person and you can't say no to that person and you can't say no to a third person and all of a sudden it's stacking up on you and now you're in a box in your house in your loft with some cardboard with a cardboard desk whatever and you literally, I mean, in that instance you may not even get some daylight. So I don't really know what the question is that I'm trying to put together here, but understanding how you deal with those triggers early on is what I've gleaned from you in the past about how to start dealing with your internal battles, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the most useful thing for me over lockdown has been boundaries. Yeah, it's really taught me what is important to me. What will I say yes to? What will I say no to? And when you have those clear boundaries, so the work I turned away this week, I've turned away 2 speaking gigs because they wanted more from me than I had time to give at such short notice. And they weren't going to pay me enough to make it worth my while. So when I turned down this work, I did it in a way that didn't cause offense and that actually allowed them to see that it was okay for them to have boundaries too. So this has been a real learning for me, and turning away work that isn't a great fit gives me more time and headspace to attract the work that is a brilliant fit. And sure enough, within an hour of turning down the most recent speaking gig I said no to, I had 2 more people sign up on my Stepping Up to Lead program that's going to actually help them way more and generate about 10 times as much revenue as the speaking gig was offering. Yeah. So these things happen.
Yeah, and they do happen for a reason a lot of the time. And there is that sort of old adage that for every yes, imagine all the things you're saying no to, which can seem like backwards logic to a lot of people. And I know that if you are either insecure in the way in your place of work or your opinion of yourself in your place of work, that's really the thing. Or you're an entrepreneur that's struggling to, you know, make ends meet at the this moment in time, then saying no to work can also seem like a bit like suicide, to be honest. But the reality is that you need to be demonstrating the value that you have, and if you focus on that, then actually these things do come and go, and ultimately you end up in a better place.
Absolutely. And Pete, that's such an important point you just made. Demonstrating the value that you have to share and to offer and to add. This has been so important for me over lockdown, as I had to reinvigorate the business and convince the corporates that they did want to work virtually, and also go back to doing much more of my entrepreneurial work. The key thing has been focusing on one thing. I've actually narrowed down what I sell to just three things now, whereas before I had a portfolio of about 30. And this focus, I know, you know what, we're all like it, yeah? And obviously I still sell my books and stuff as well, but I have it on my whiteboard in my office, revenue priorities. Those three things are listed. And when I say revenue, that's also my priority on where I will spend my energy. So anything that comes through my door, I can look at it and say, does that fit with one of those three? Yes, great, let's consider it. No, probably don't have time then. And that has been life-changing.
Wow. So let's just, if you wouldn't mind, let's just unpack that a little bit. So I'd realize you're coming at it from the side of having a lot of things and then narrowing it down to a small selection, but I'm assuming the principles work the other way. If you've got nothing and actually then trying to piece a number of things together, it is, I would say, it's important to have more than one. And as you say, you've got three, which is great. So what was kind of the thought process you went through then to streamline those things down? Was it just a case of, okay, so certain things aren't going to work anyway because of the situation we're in, and these are the things that will? Or was it a bit more strategic than that and putting together packages or new services, etc.?
It was very strategic, and it was looking at what is my core genius. My core genius is getting people out of their own way, clearing the imposter syndrome, clearing up the self-imposed glass ceilings we don't even know are there. And I'm also really good at business strategy. So how can I build those two together? And that runs through the core of each of those three offerings. So the first one is, okay, then I realized I actually serve three very different audiences with what I do. I serve my corporate clients who are stepping up to lead the next level. I serve my entrepreneurial team clients who are looking to grow their business to the next level, wanting to make a bigger difference. And I also serve an audience of people who want to be out there doing the work I'm doing, because there's only one of me and I can't do it all. So what I did is I took my core genius and looked at how can I then create three core offerings, one serving each of those audiences. So the messaging within it is very similar, but the way they experience it and the output is different. So my entrepreneurs have my Passionate World Changers Club, where we do the ditching imposter syndrome. And then we look at stuff like how to create a speaking career that is actually worth doing, you know, and all these other bigger strategic projects rather than just the tactical approach. I've then got the Stepping Up to Lead program, which is for my corporate clients who are either looking to get promoted to the next level, or they've had that kind of tap on the shoulder saying, you ought to be applying for this. And something inside them has gone, yes, but no. Yeah. So that gets them out of their own way in a really deep, genuine way. But then they also get to experience who they want to become. So they're actually doing much of the same work as the entrepreneurs, but it needs to be positioned and delivered differently for them. And then my third aspect is, I now have, this is something that lockdown's given me time to create and get certified and signed off. I have an internationally recognized certification program now for imposter syndrome mentors, which is a postgrad program for existing coaches. So the core theme running through it is the same for all three, but they all need it to be delivered and experienced in a different way. So I'm not splitting myself in three anymore. There's one Claire who just shows up in a slightly different way for each of those three audiences. Does that make sense, Pete?
That makes perfect sense. And you know, I'm gonna sort of name drop a book, I suppose, here. So off the back of the last Youpreneur Summit, and Youpreneur is a lot of things, led by Chris Ducker, and yeah. The summit is or was, there isn't one this year, their annual sort of get-together conference-y type setup, which has brilliant speakers but also a brilliant nightlife. Let's just put it that way. And Claire and I met there a few years ago. And but this last year, one of the speakers was Todd Herman talking about the alter ego effect. And I don't think there was a person in the room that didn't either listen or read or buy that book after Todd's session. He did very well out of that audience. Mm. I listened to it. I listened to a lot of audiobooks, and that was essentially the crux to what the alter ego is, you know, taking the best bits of you, but also the best bits of somebody that you think you want to be into a scenario. And Todd's history is he's trained sort of athletes to perform at the height of their careers so that, you know, when they're at the Olympics, they don't freeze up and they do deliver and all that kind of stuff. And I realize that's very specific, but the way that he's put it into a process is very interesting. So there'll be a link to Todd's book in the show notes. Yeah. It does make sense.
I don't know how edgy you want me to be today, Pete, but I actually have a point of view on Todd's process.
Oh, go for it. I love being edgy. Yes.
I love Todd.
Everybody's going to leave this podcast, you know, really wanting or understanding why everybody loves Claire Yosa, right? This is the thing.
Bless your heart, Pete. So let's look at imposter syndrome, which is basically the fear at 3 a.m. in the morning of somebody finding out you're not as good as you're supposed to be. You're not good enough, that you're a fraud, that you're faking it, even though there's lots of evidence that you've got plenty of skills and talent. And this causes us to self-sabotage because it triggers the fear response that says, when that great opportunity comes, oh no, that's dangerous, so I won't do it. You know, we don't return the call, we discount without being asked, we don't have boundaries with clients, we overwork, we overgive, we don't launch that product or idea that actually could be in our genius zone because it's, who am I to do that? So I describe imposter syndrome as being the gap between who you see yourself as being and who you think you need to be in order to achieve or create something. And that gap can look like a ravine. The more important to you the thing is that you want to achieve or create, the wider the gap can be and the deeper it can be. And what we do, because obviously lots of people have achieved success despite imposter syndrome, is we build a bridge over that ravine. And I call it the bridge of coping strategies. And that bridge of coping strategies, all those things that we do where we psych ourselves up and we say, you know, beat ourselves up, like, don't be so stupid, of course you're good enough, or we use affirmations, whatever we do, that bridge of coping strategies gets us across the ravine. And the thing is that as we're taking action, walking over the bridge of coping strategies, if you look down, it's terrifying. And depending how good your coping strategies are, depends on how rickety your bridge is, whether it's one of those swinging rope bridges that you see in the Amazon, or whether it's like a motorway bridge. But the thing is that coping strategies are like sticky plasters, and sticky plasters come off. So it's a really high stress way of achieving your dreams. And we're still likely to self-sabotage because that ravine is scary. So the alter ego just gives you a slightly more reliable bridge. It is a coping strategy because what it's relying on is you looking at people outside of you saying, I want to be like Fred. I'm going to take that aspect of Fred. If you're already running self-talk of I'm not good enough, what does having to take on a quality from somebody outside of you do to that self-talk? I'm so not good enough that I have to pretend to be Fred to survive in that meeting. So it can actually inadvertently, for a lot of people with imposter syndrome, make the bridge of coping strategies more rickety. And what I love to do instead is to help people take out the hidden blocks and fears, to clear them out so that they can shift who they see themselves as being, or even who they allow themselves to become, so that they close the ravine, So there's no need for a bridge of coping strategies. So you don't have to take on a persona or qualities from somebody else. You just get to show up as all of who you really are with totally grounded confidence and really stepping into your genius to make the difference you're really here to make.
Wow. I don't know what to say. Which doesn't make for a great podcast, if I'm being honest.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. No, that was brilliant. You're dead right. There's, my dad would always say there's always more than one way of skinning a cat.
Exactly. And
apologies to cat lovers. He didn't actually skin cats. No cats were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Exactly. And there's, you know, there is a need for coping strategies. Yeah. I teach sticky plasters and emergency quick fixes. But the key is that you actually then need to move beyond the coping strategies if you really want to set yourself free to be all of who you really are rather than being who Fred is.
Yeah, that is a far better way of saying what I was about to say. So thank you for that. Yeah, you dug me out of that one. but yeah, there's either you're right. There are times when you do need those quick fixes in order. Mm. I have something to do this week. And yeah, exactly. Let's face it.
Or I'm walking into that meeting. Yeah. Or I'm turning on Zoom.
I'm climbing up the ladder into the loft.
Exactly. I'm just going to try. Oh gosh, the spiders. Oh, don't go there.
But then the other way of looking at it is to take the obstacles out the way. And whilst exactly. I love your idea of a ravine, because that's the kind of thing you'd need to get a bridge over and cuts to how deep some of these things go. But I suppose what you're actually doing is filling that ravine one shovel at a time. So it's a far longer process that ends with a far more stable result.
So here's something. A lot of people think it takes a long time. So as I say, lockdown has brought us many gifts. For me, it's brought me stepping up to lead for my corporate clients, but also my passionate world changers get access to that program too, but a different version of it. Mm-hmm. Because it's a mixture of self-study, practice work, group calls, and then one-to-one, I found that by the end of week four, people are creating transformations in their confidence and clearing imposter syndrome that previously would have taken a year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's maybe not a shovel at a time, but dump a truck at a time. Then
actually, what happens is, you know, like in these like Indiana Jones type films, where suddenly the walls on the cave start moving. It's like every one of them has got a wall on the cave starts moving. So what happens is actually the walls close, except you're not down in the ravine. You're standing on one side, totally safe. So you're not actually even having to fill the ravine. Those walls move until the gap starts to become so small you can just step over it. And then by the end of 3 months, which is how long my program normally takes, by the end of the 3 months, there is no gap. And even if you then stretch a comfort zone or get promoted or get a client that you think, oh my goodness, I never thought I'd get them, and the ravine threatens to try and reopen, you've got the tools that mean within an hour, you can close the gap. And the more you practice, so where I'm at now is if an opportunity comes up and I go, oh, you know that body flinch that kind of goes, oh, don't know if I can do that. It takes about 90 seconds now to close the ravine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because, and it's real. And if you can feel the difference, you feel yourself lining up with the real version of you rather than the self-talk inner drama queen version of you. Or should I say me? Because you don't have an inner drama queen, I'm quite sure, Pete.
I don't know about that. I've got two drama queens, especially at 3 o'clock in the morning when they decide to wake each other up.
Exactly.
No, I kid. I'm jesting. But the... That is when all of a sudden this then does become life-changing, because then at that moment you can take a few deep breaths, find those 90 seconds and move on with your day, your life, your whatever the opportunity, whatever that thing is, and you know, you get to the end of a week or a month or a quarter or however you do it, and you can look back. And actually, I think that's the thing that people sometimes do miss out on, that you need to stop and reflect on what you have done and take pride and aspiration. There's nothing wrong with being proud in what you have achieved.
Exactly. I know that pride is what
people feel like they need permission for that.
Exactly. And I know they say that pride is one of the seven deadly sins. But actually, it's a really, even if you're kind of like you were brought up and that was the values in your childhood and in your culture, you can swap it around and you can make it gratitude. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in fact, Pete, you and I discussed before the show that I wanted to be able to share a free gift with everybody listening. And I think this might be the perfect gift, actually. I have a process I call celebrating your micro wins. And it's fabulous because what it does is it helps you focus at the end of each working day. What are three specific things I achieved today? And you're talking about yourself rather than, oh, the world was great or this wonderful thing happened. So it's things that you did and you're making it specific, which means that that bit of our self-talk that goes, oh, yeah, but can't butt in because it's saying, well, actually, yeah, I did actually see you do that. And the reason for three is the process actually, you think about that thing in a certain way for 20 seconds. And by the time you've done it for a minute, you've reset the nervous system. You've cancelled out any stress hormones in the body and you're starting to create new neural pathways in the brain. So this celebrating three micro wins is the most potent way I've ever created of rewiring your inner critic to become a genuine cheerleader. And also reprogramming all of the cells in the body, because the inner critic fires off stress hormones in the body's cells that then create our emotions that feed the inner critic that goes around the cycle that creates the inner drama queen. In 60 seconds, you start to clear the stress hormones out of those cells and you're giving yourself an endorphin and dopamine hit. And it's free and it's something you can do anytime, you know, as you're turning off your computer at the end of the day. Three micro wins with this process starts to shift you to spot. It literally rewires the filters in the brain that show us what to pay attention to, the reticular activating system. It shifts it to filter in what you're doing well, which starts to rebalance the inner critic. And eventually, after just a few weeks, your inner critic starts to become a cheerleader. And this closes the ravine.
There you go. There
so do you think go. That might, would it be useful?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There'll be, I know you've put it on a web page somewhere. Yeah. I was trying to find the email with the link in while you were talking.
Okay. So it's going to be at clareyosa.com/retainfm.
That's fantastic. There will be a link in the show notes, guys. So if you visit peteeverett.com/120, you will you will there'll be a link on there that will take you straight through to it as well. So that is also I love the way actually that we managed to get to that point, that you know, just through talking about skinning cats anyway. Yeah. The other thing that I do want to mention before you go is part of your work through this year has then been as culminating in Rock 2021.
Yeah, Let's Rock 2021 is the best year. Yeah,
absolutely. Which is a virtual event that you're putting on, but over a period of days.
Yes.
Interviewing some fabulous guests, and somehow I managed to also cling on to the bottom of that list. So
so let me just rephrase that, Pete. Okay. So you were on my, when I had the crazy idea for this, okay, you were on my immediate list of people I knew I wanted to be involved if they would agree to it.
Thank you very much.
So you were really not cool. On the bottom of my list, dear man. And this all came from you sharing stuff on social media about how we need to get more strategic in how we're designing our businesses, because that's such an important message. And a lot of people are talking about tactics and how to grow your YouTube channel and how to get more followers on Instagram. But what you're talking about with your message and your audience is, why are you doing this? And how are you going to know it's a success? And is this actually going to be in alignment with your business values and business strategy? And that message is missing, which is why you were on my dream list of interviewees.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm delighted to be part of it. So do you want to give us the deets? What's happening? When's it happening?
Absolutely. It's going to be an amazing event. So from the 23rd to the 27th of November, there are three sessions each day. So you've got plenty of time in between them to do your normal work. We've got actually 13 people being interviewed, and we're doing two masterminding sessions after at halfway points. So you can actually get together with fellow business owners and talk about what's really inspired you from the sessions and put your action plans together. We've got a brilliant networking session that we're doing on the Wednesday evening, where people will be invited to bring their favorite tipple, whether that is alcoholic or tea or whatever. And we're wrapping it up on the Friday with an implementation workshop. So that this is not just a talking shop. Each interviewee, as I'm talking to them as we go through the next few weeks to agree what we're going to discuss, they're not just saying the kind of stuff that you hear them saying every day. They're going below the surface on the stuff that they don't normally teach. They're going to be talking about things that they've discovered over lockdown that no longer work. And the strategies that they predict are going to be essential for us in 2021. And the other thing I'm really excited about is at the end of each interview, which is half an hour, we're doing a 10 to 15 minute implementation session, because information's great. We've all been to events. You take pages and pages of notes, and then they just make you feel guilty for the next year because you don't do anything. So after each interview, I'm running a short session each time to help you pull out the core actions you want to take based on what you learned in that interview. And then we're running a do one thing now competition. Before the end of that 15 minutes, you will take the tiniest first action towards that action list, so that you are making progress as we go through the week. And by the time you get to the end of the week and we've done the implementation action planning workshop, you will already be starting to see results. So this is not a talking shop. It's not a death by Zoom. This is the latest from people I go to and consider as experts in their fields. And they're going to be sharing stuff they've not shared before. And you are going to be absolutely supported on implementing this in ways that fit in with your schedule, no matter how busy you are, so that together we can all rock 2021, because we've had a tough year this year. We don't know what's coming next year. So the key aim is to make our businesses COVID resilient and more in alignment with who we want to become.
There you go. I definitely couldn't have said it that succinctly. But in all seriousness, it's a fantastic structure for an event. Having those implementation times after each speaker. Firstly, I love the fact that you've gone for an interview format as well, because
It's live as well, so that people get to ask questions. No offense, Pete, I'll field the nice ones for you. Yeah.
Thank you. By having that implementation time, it also means you can enjoy the speaker more, because you don't need to be focused on literally scribbling down every nugget that they're going to say, and you don't need to be worried about missing them. And actually, if I look back at some of the conferences I've been at, the sessions I've often got the most out of, the ones I can certainly remember, are the ones where I've sat back in my chair, crossed my arms, and enjoyed what was going on, rather than struggling to take as many notes in Evernote as I possibly could, and then having to switch between your phone and your iPad so that you can get a picture of the screen, all that kind of stuff. So
I think and people get a year's access to the replays as well, so there is no rush access.
Fantastic. That's awesome. And then we've got and as you say, you've then paced it so it isn't death by Zoom every day for three days. It is an hour here, an hour there, an hour somewhere else, and you just move on through the day with the space to get your own stuff done. I think it's a brilliant concept. I'm delighted to be part of it. Again, the link to Let's Rock 2021, if you want to secure your space, will be in the show notes. It is clareyosa.com/rock, which is also one of the coolest URLs on your website, I think. I'm delighted to be part of it. I'd love to meet some of the guys that I know listen to the podcast there. Go and get your spot, and I'll certainly be tuning into a large portion of it, and trying to get as much out of it as I possibly can. That'd be brilliant.
Fantastic. I can't wait to share it with everyone, Pete. It's going to be an amazing, amazing event. And actually, even if you're listening to this on the replay in a year's time, still check out the URL, because you might be able to get replay access.
Fantastic. Well, Claire, thank you so much for your time. You've been a superstar, as you always are. If people want to reach out to you, your website is clairejosa.com. You're active in our Facebook group. Are there any other ways that you like people to get in touch with you, or are they the main ones?
Yeah, Facebook and LinkedIn. So, you know, if you're into Facebook, come and find me on Facebook. I also spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. And if you want to hear about my political views and which cat cartoons I love, I'm on Twitter.
I love the fact that you've got a space for that. That's brilliant. Claire, thanks for your time. It's been a delight.
Thanks so much, Pete. It's been an absolute joy.